This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 96 for August 24th, 2007. I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, and with me are Executive Editor, Kristen Salvatore.
Hello.
Senior Executive Intern, Norman Chan.
Aloha.
And one day older as of yesterday.
Yes!
I think we're all one day older as of yesterday.
Or 1 year older as of yesterday. Damn you in pointing out my obvious. And Gary Witta, our Backspace columnist.
Bioshock!
A little later, Chuck Osborne will be interviewing Ken Levine of 2K in response to all the Bioshock problems that have been popping up. But before that, we come to you with some very sad news. Today, Friday the 24th, is the end of an era. Our esteemed editor-in-chief, Greg Viederman, the Veed, is leaving the magazine. And he just sniffed over there. He would be on the podcast, and he was on yesterday. He was on yesterday to say goodbye, but we got cut off by some weather difficulties that have sidelined our producer, Jeremy Williams.
I was just going to say, if Jeremy were here, we would ask him to play Taps music, but he's not, and it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I guess there's a tornado out in Chicago that put him out of commission temporarily.
But as important as that is, yeah. Greg's leaving.
Yeah, so, Greg, we'll be playing a goodbye from Greg in a little bit, but yeah, right now he's a little bit busy wrapping up all the odds and ends here that, you should see that the giant pile of crap on his desk that he had to carry away. So
that he had to root through to figure out what he was going to take from the office when he left.
He's taking the giant Optimus Prime, for God's sake.
Aw, you know what? Where's the Optimus Prime?
Yeah.
Greg, can I have Optimus Prime?
Yeah, Optimus Prime.
Just to be on the podcast for a minute. Yeah. Okay, thanks. Would you guys like to talk to Optimus Prime? Here, wait.
Megatron must be stopped.
I agree. What a... Great statement.
So
it's hard to take issue with that, isn't it?
All we need is a little energon and a lot of luck.
So Peter Cullen.
You know what? I kind of hope that Optimus Prime is going to take Greg's spot on the magazine.
At least in the podcast.
Optimus Prime for EIC.
It is really hard to take the contrary position there, isn't it? It's like, well, no, I think we should let Megatron do whatever he wants. That just doesn't fly at all.
And Roshan and love? Good idea.
Yeah. You know, it takes a strong person to make the unpopular decisions there.
Autobots, transform, and roll out.
That about sums it up.
Okay, so we're now going to play the clip from yesterday's attempted recording of Greg's goodbye.
Yeah, I've been here at the magazine for 9 years. I've taken a job in the tech industry. I can't be any more specific than that right now, unfortunately. But it's still related to games. But no longer games journalism. So yeah, that is all there is to say about that. I really enjoyed my time here. Really, really feel honored to have had a chance to reach so many, fellow gamers and have the crazy that I spout resonate with them in any way, is incredible and I've loved it and I will miss all of you guys. So thanks for having me. I'm out.
And
this is
the podcast.
And podcast.
Over.
Yeah.
So he's deserting his family, is what he's saying, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. But so, guys, as a former PC Gamer editor in chief, do you have any parting words of wisdom for Greg?
It's a tough thing to do to leave PC Gamer. It's definitely one of the best jobs I ever had. But from what I've heard, Greg's got a nice little gig lined up, and I'm sure he'll do very well. But he'll always look back on his time at PC Gamer in fondness, particularly when he reflects on all the things that he learned from me over the years.
Like what exactly?
Get out when you're ahead. You're still at the top before people figure out you're a fraud.
That is some pretty good advice.
That's sort of good advice for anything.
Yeah.
He had a good run. He had a good run, the Veed. I think, how long was he at EIC? It may have been longer than me. A
couple of years?
Two years?
2 years?
Almost 2 years.
Okay. But he's been at Future for 9 years.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I was at Future around that same length, I think. Maybe a bit longer.
I was about to make fun of you, but then I remembered that I left and actually came back, so.
Yeah, just when you can make you're out, pull you back in. Wiedemann may return one day.
They always come crawling back. So, on to the big news of the week, which has been the release of BioShock on PC, which has not
BioShock
not been free of problems despite being an awesome game. So
just for you two. I've had
for us,
a perfect experience.
The BioShock launch has not been free of problems. I myself had some issues where that I posted about on the PC Gamer blog where we got the game in, and I wanted to test out the differences between DX9 and DX10. So I installed on a Windows Vista machine and a Windows XP machine. And, you know, that all went fine. And then I took it home and tried to play it there, and I was told, no, you've installed this one too many times. And I guess, Gaz, you had a whole different set of problems.
Tell the story. Tell your story, but tell it with a lot more flavor than Dan's boring.
Well, mine is all on the website. You can go read mine in brilliant detail. Gaz is the untold story.
Okay. I just think it's a real shame that a game this good had to be overshadowed by some of these stupid issues at launch. It really feels like it's taken some of the attention away from what a good game these guys made. But my experience was really, really frustrating. I mean, as some people who follow the podcast or the column in the magazine will know, I've been building a new PC recently, specifically for this new generation of games like BioShock and Crysis. I've built a new machine completely from scratch, and I tried to be completely diligent. I've been PC gaming for a long time, so I've tried to be completely diligent and to anticipate every possible PC quirk. You know, I really splurged and bought, you know, all the latest up-to-date components. I've got a 3 gigahertz dual core in here, a Sound Blaster, X-Fi, 8800 GTX, loads of RAM, brand new motherboard, you know, really, really put a lot of attention into building this machine so it would be as game-ready as possible, installed all the latest drivers, really kind of went above and beyond to make sure I had the latest DirectX 10, the latest EAX drivers for the X-Fi card, the latest beta drivers from NVIDIA for BioShock, which were supposed to increase compatibility. I mean, I really did a lot more than I think the average PC gamer should be expected to do. I went above and beyond, I feel, and I still had nothing but trouble with getting the game to work. There was an issue initially with I bought a very good quality Plex Store DVD rewritable drive, which the installer, I guess there was a copy protection issue where this software called SecureROM doesn't trust that drive and thinks I'm trying to pirate the game, so it wouldn't install the game properly. I had to open up my PC and find another DVD drive and plug it in that I could install the game from. Then there were issues with there were video driver issues. It didn't think that I had installed the beta drivers, even though I had. I crashed when trying to restore from a save game, and when I finally got back, all my key settings and sound settings and resolution settings were screwed up. I had to restart before I could get anything done. It took a good 24 hours of just sheer frustration before I was finally able to settle everything down. I even managed to avoid some of the bigger issues that people are having. I know a lot of people are very dissatisfied with the widescreen situation, with the how many installs you can get from any one copy of the game. I mean, it really does seem to be fraught with peril, and it's really, really, I think, highlighted the difference between PC gaming, which obviously has a lot of benefits, but is a real pain in the ass sometimes to do the simplest things, compared to the 360 version, which launched the same day, and people could just pop into their 360 and play right out of the box without any of this nonsense with installs and drivers and hardware quirks. You know, the game just works.
Though, to be fair, the widescreen thing is a kind of a nitpicky thing. I've been playing, you know, for hours and hours now, and I have had no trouble whatsoever with, you know, I'm not feeling like I'm missing anything.
I think the widescreen issue is also a thing where the community have kind of overreacted here. I think there's been a bit of a pylon. I mean, yeah, to be fair to Irrational, as they used to be called, you know, they came out and made a pretty definitive statement saying, you know, we looked at all the different ways to, you know, show the aspect ratios in this game, and we picked the one that we felt was the best. It's no different to a film director, you know, choosing how to frame his shots, whether he wants to do true widescreen or the super extended widescreen or 4x3. You know, they made it an artistic decision based on what they thought was the best field of view available to the player.
But do you want to explain what the widescreen problem is?
the problem is, it seems to be that instead of it being quote unquote true widescreen, what they've actually done is present the game in kind of an old-fashioned 4x3 standard definition TV ratio, and then cropped parts of the image to create the illusion of.
And I think that's actually wrong. That's what that's what it seems like it is.
Yeah.
But from what we understand, the way it actually happened is that they developed the game because they knew it was going to come out on 360 beforehand. They developed it for widescreen initially, the 16x9, 16x10 ratio, and then, or 16x9 actually, and then for PC, when you have the 1900 by 1200 instead of 1080, they made it 16x10, and then for 4x3 screens, they opened up the other space. So, but when they designed it, it was actually designed for 16x9.
Yeah, I mean, there have clearly been some screw ups here. So I think seems to be more on Take-Two's end with the copy protection and the verification issues. So they are responding to that. I think they increased the number of authentications you can get from any one copy of the game. The widescreen issue, though, I think is a case of some of these kind of hardcore widescreen lunatics overreacting and demanding that everything be in super widescreen, even though that may not have been, you know, the developer's chosen preference for how to present the game. But you know, it's come on the back of all these other issues. To be fair, you know, I had 24 hours of immense frustration with getting the game to work correctly. Now finally I think everything's settled down and I'm enjoying the hell out of the game. But it did really highlight for me, just some of, you know, the high price that we PC gamers sometimes play for, you know, I mean, I think BioShock is absolutely the definitive version. You know, it offers everything the 360 version does, but with superior controls and higher resolutions. But to get those, sometimes you really have to jump through some hoops that, you know, console owners, it's just alien to them why you would have to go through so much hassle just to play a game.
Gary, have you played both the 360 and PC versions now?
I played the 360 demo, so I suppose you could say yes.
Okay. How do you feel about the controls?
PC version. You know, I've always felt, and I know this is going to make Dan go as red as a beetroot, but I've always felt that the dual thumbstick control in these games is actually pretty good. It felt pretty natural to me, and it's also nice to be able to have all the different keys, you know, right under your hand. You know, it's nice to be able to just press the B button to take a health pack.
Oh, you know, works great if you don't mind auto aim.
Yes,
you know, if you mind the game playing itself, if you don't mind that the game playing itself and shooting all the bad guys for you, that's fine.
Well, that's first of all, no, that's.
Exactly. I like to actually play my games. You know, that's just me.
There's a lot more finesse in the keyboard and mouse control. The trade-off is, you know, you don't have a custom-made controller. You can, of course, play the PC version with an Xbox 360 controller. You'd be mad to, but there are little things like just having all the buttons easily accessible under your fingertips. Whereas with keyboard and mouse, the trade-off is, you know, you have to kind of lunge across the keyboard sometimes to find the right key to do what you want to do.
Just upset because he's a lefty.
that makes it more difficult for me. I don't use WASD keys. And normally you can, you know, what I guess right-handed gamers do is they have WASD, and then the key array immediately around those are the other critical keys, so they can very quickly grab stuff. I use the mouse in the left hand, and I use the cursor keys to move around, which means if I F for a health pack, I have to kind of reach. I mean, I guess I could rebind it to something closer. But often in the heat of the moment, you know, that it's just a, you know, that quarter of a second or whatever it takes to get that key can cost you.
Yeah, and the thing with BioShock is that they really redid all the GUIs and all the plasmid and gene stuff so that the interface is completely different for the PC, and it also makes hacking in the game a lot easier when you can use the mouse, which I found.
Hacking
helpful.
Is a lot easier in the PC version. I found it a little. I've got used to it now, but initially I liked the Xbox 360 version of just left triggered as plasmids and right triggered as.
Yes, that is very useful.
But the PC version of left trigger fires and right trigger switches back and forth, I found myself getting very befuddled by that in the early going.
Yeah, at first it takes a little bit of getting used to, but the fact that you can hit shift to pause at any time and switch weapons takes kind of the fear out of using that. Because it's not like you're struggling to find your weapon while the enemy's killing you, because you can just pause it. So it's not a big issue. But let's cut over to Chuck's interview with Ken Levine and see what he has to say about all these issues. And we do apologize for the audio quality. It's a phone interview, not a Skype interview. So, he's still got some valuable stuff to say.
Chuck Osborne, Senior Executive Editor for PC Gamer Magazine, and today I am talking with Ken Levine, the founder of Irrational, now co-founder, and also creative director of BioShock. So, Ken, first up, I just have to thank you for making BioShock in the first place. I think the feedback has just been incredible so far.
Thanks, Chuck. That's great. we worked hard on it, and it was, you know, I think there were times we were like, are we totally insane? And so, you know, because it wasn't always clear that the pseudo-objectivist underwater utopia would make a bestseller. But, you know, we've been very gratified this week.
Right. Well, I, personally, speaking on a personal level, I've been a fan of yours, you know, since, obviously with System Shock 2, but then, of course, I was a huge fanboy for Freedom Force, so...
I remember the review. That was like one of our first reviews.
So, this is just continuing the streak. And I have to say that my personal experience in playing the game on the PC, it ran like butter. There were no glitches, no hiccups, no crashes, nothing like that. However, the same can't be said for everyone.
Yep.
So why has the PC release been so problematic?
Well, first, Rick, I want to thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on today. You know, I'm a big believer in, you know, sunshine being the best disinfectant, and when there are, you know, if there are people who perceive problems, what I want to do is get in front of them and say, okay, here's what's going on, here's what we're doing about it, and here's what you can expect out of us. So, yeah, I think we had a couple of problems in the launch week, there's no doubt. The sort of core of a lot of these problems was that I think the biggest problem for me was the activation server problem, that we had some people trying to activate the game, and they couldn't, because you buy a game, you bring it home, you should have a reasonable expectation that you can play with it and activate it. And we did not expect, frankly, the game. We expected it to do well. I think we were a little surprised by how well it did, and our servers got a little overwhelmed, and they died in New York, and then we didn't have an effective plan in place, honestly. The 2K offices, they didn't have a plan in place to have somebody be on call and go bring it back up, because we just had never really done this kind of thing before in terms of activation. And we screwed it up, and there were 6 hours or so where people couldn't activate the game, and that must have been very frustrating for them. Our way we've dealt with that is we've now... aware of the problem, and we have a staffing plan that involves watching those servers, somebody watching them, immediate contact to get it back up if it does go down, because as you know, if you've been through, launches before, whether it's Half-Life 2 or World of Warcraft, even, good launches, things don't always go to plan, when you have a technical plan, when you sort of meet reality. We had a similar problem in Europe when we did the European launch today, and in Austria, and the server went down, and somebody was sitting right next to it, and an hour and a half later or so, we had it back up. So we've gone from 6 hours from a downtime to an hour and a half of downtime. And, I understand why that annoyed people. I would be annoyed, too, and all I can say is, yep, we kind of blew that one, and, we're working to fix it. I can go on to the other problems, do you want to ask about them, or I might certainly have other problems I could talk about and what we're doing about it.
I was just going to say that I understand that one of the big problems in helping people out was that the phone number for customer service was in the panel, right?
That was a highly technical problem of printing one phone number in text under the raw under U.S. that was Canadian, and the other one under that was Canadian under U.S. Yes, chalk that up under boneheaded, page layout. Stupid stuff. People made mistakes, and we're fixing it. We posted on the forum, and in future printings, that will be corrected. Amateur hour screw up, and I have no excuse for it except it's an amateur hour screw up, and we're working to fix it.
So if someone needs customer support then, and they live in the U.S., they should actually call the Canadian number.
Yeah, we can give the numbers here, or they can go to their manual and invert the numbers. The U.S. number is listed as the Canadian number, and the Canadian number is listed as the U.S. number.
Okay. And so, what are some of the other problems then that you think that BioShock has had?
The other problem that we were sort of, and this surprised me, Chuck, because, if somebody had come to me 6 months ago when we were working on the game and I was sort of using aspect ratios and field of views, and I was looking primarily at the widescreen stuff, that if you had come to me for screen support, not like, you know, the plot or the gameplay or, you know, whatever. It was going to be how we implemented widescreen support. I would have, you know, told you you were insane. Now, however, I'm a firm believer as a gamer that gamers should have... should be able to play the game the way, as much as possible, as much as we can give them, the way they want to play it. And so when people started freaking out about the widescreen support, you know, hey, I might ask people to think about the level of vitriol and the sort of issue, the timing of how quickly they wanted a change here and wanted responses. You know, this is happening on the first day of launch. But, you know, my general feeling is, hey, it's their game. They paid $50 for it. If we can hook them up, let's hook them up. So, you know, we did the research. We have to then go back before we say anything. And, you know, you know something about game development. It doesn't happen in seconds and minutes and hours. It happens in days, weeks, and months, and sometimes years. Not saying the patch is going to take years, but it is a deliberative, thoughtful process if you're going to do it right. We had to go back and, you know, say, okay, what can we do about this? And we sort of analyzed it enough to this point where we're comfortable saying, yes, we'll be able to address this on the PC in a future patch. And
how was widescreen implemented the way it was in the first place?
It was an aesthetic choice on the part of the team that they had an optimal, the platonic ideal of the visual of the game was the widescreen ratio we get, right? And then we started from that. And then when we went over to bring it over to 4:3, because most of us were developing the games, we have several monitors on our desk. But when we would run the game, or when we run it on the 360 or run it on the PC, it would go out to your widescreen monitor. So we weren't really thinking that much about 4:3, honestly. When we got to the point where we had a 4:3 implementation, there was somebody who said, well, we could either put black bars here. You know, you have a bunch of options. You could either do black bars, or you could, you know, just extend, you know, a couple of, few dozen pixels up and down. And that was the choice they made. Now, clearly, there are people, you know, if you look at, I think Wolf's Planet put the black bars on, who would have preferred that approach. But honestly, I promise people, widescreen users, it was maybe insensitive to what they want, but it was not an intentional diss or a slam at widescreen users. It was just we weren't thinking that much about 4:3. We thought about I would sit in front of, as a creative director, I would sit there and I'd have a programmer and I'd say, well, field of view, a little more this way, a little more that way, a little more, no, I want to be this big in the world, I want to be this tall in the world, because those are all things you really have to think about when you make a game. How tall am I in the world? Where's the camera? How big am I relative to other things? In BioShock, there's certain tricks we do, as we did in System Shock, that are a little different than some other games to give you that feeling of intensity and claustrophobia. And, you know, at the end of the day, it hurts me to think that other people are not happy with the field of view because we really carefully chose it. But hey, it's not my game. It's their game experience, not mine. So I'm not going to tell them how to experience it. I don't necessarily agree with the aesthetic choice that some people might make about it. But hey, they paid $50, not me.
Do you have an ETA on when the fix will be available?
No, because we're very careful. You know, in software development, you know, there's several stages you go through. First, you sort of collate feature requests and decide which ones you're going to do, and this is feature requests. So now we've agreed we're going to do this, and you've collated the feature requests, and you determine if it's possible. We have determined it's possible. But then you have to say, okay, how are we going to do it? Who's going to do it? Which members of the team? What interface support are we going to have for it? And then there's like a million bugs it's going to introduce. So that's the difference between that really great guy who did that sort of widescreen hack. And we sent him a video card as an expression of our appreciation for his, you know, his passion for this. He, as a non-professional game developer, or I don't know if that's what he does in his side, but he obviously didn't do it under us. He doesn't have to worry about things like, hey, did certain interactive sequences get broken? You know, now that you can see things with a different FOV that you couldn't see before that we never bothered to, you know, clean up because we knew it would be outside of the FOV. Are certain sequences going to get broken? What bugs are going to be introduced by this? What performance implications there are? We have to think about all these things as you know, releasing professional game development products that a guy working on a sort of a hack patch doesn't need to. So it takes us a lot longer. pipeline. We have committed to doing it.
Okay.
So those times where people say Levine promised, at this point I can say Levine promises that we're doing this, as compared to many times where people have interpreted, you know, things as promises. Where I have assurances from my technical director and partner, John Shea, that we can do this. So I believe in John enough that he can count it as my promise as well.
Now, Ken, I know that this may be out of your control and probably wasn't your decision, but I know one of the big problems that a lot of people are having with BioShock actually has to do with the secure ROM piracy protection that's on the game. Do you happen to know why you guys decided to go that route?
I was particularly involved in, or as compared to, like, you know, choosing a particular aspect ratio in any, I'll take full responsibility if you hate the story, hate the gameplay, that's all me, hate how we dealt with the little sisters, that's all me, blame me. This stuff is not really my choice.
So that's who came in that made that decision.
Yeah. You know, however, I think that... you know, it is Sekirom, you know, which has been on a million games, been on our games before. This isn't, you know, this isn't a Star Force situation where you have, you know, something more invasive. Now, you may have, you know, a million other Sekirom games, like whether it's, you know, Rainbow Six Vegas or Command & Conquer 3, and if you found those invasive, you'll also find this invasive. If you didn't find those invasive, you won't find this invasive. We do have the additional notion of activation, so, which is some of I think, what bothers people about it.
If you had the choice, what piracy protection scheme would you have gone with instead?
You know, it's a really tough question for two reasons. One is that I'm not a particularly technical person. I'm the story guy and the creative guy, and so I haven't done a real analysis of various options out there. I think, you know, if your question is philosophically, do you believe in copy protection? You know, I can give you some thoughts on that. But you know, in terms of which technical solution is the best, I don't really have a position on that.
Well, sure. What do you think about that? Because I know another one of the complaints has been that, you know, while Xbox 360 owners have been playing it now, actually a couple of days before the official release date, a lot of PC gamers have had to wait for authentication. They've had, you know, numerous problems actually getting the game to run, etc. And so I know as a champion of, you know, PC gaming and the format, how do you feel about that?
I feel badly about it. In fact, that's why, you know, I'm supposed to be on vacation this week. This is like my week off, and my wife is ready to kill me because instead I've been dedicated, and John's been dedicated, my partner, and we, you know, the 2K guys have been dedicated to fixing these issues. And I don't think you'll see a company that's had more announcements and more pronouncements and more sensitivity to user feedback than we've tried to be this week. I mean, we're at, like, what, launch day plus three. We've already made several announcements and done several things, whether it's the big, you know, the broken big, some people had some broken big daddies in the collector's edition, and then they announced that we're not only be replacing those big daddies, but we'll be giving people a free art book as well, to, as an expression of their thanks for their patience. There is, you know, and raising the number of activations and trying to fix all those problems, none of that excuses the fact that some people couldn't play the game. I don't have, like, there's nothing I can say to people to say, hey, don't worry about that, dude. You know, hey, they bought the game. They should be able to play it, and I dig that. All I can do is work as hard as I can to get them to the place where they can play the game without problem. So, you know, I hear them. It sucks, and we're working on it.
And I guess at this point I should note that one of our editors, Dan Stapleton, had actually blogged about his difficulties in getting BioShock to work because he had installed his copy twice here in order to test out the DX9, DX10 features, and then unfortunately tried to install it again at home and couldn't.
Yep.
Because you were only able to install it twice, but I understand that now the number of installations has been raised to 5.
So there's several things we've done on this front. One is we raised the installations to 5 across 5 machines, I believe, which I think is a reasonable number. You know, it's sort of on in line with the iTunes model, which we thought would be familiar to people. The other thing we've done is we had some problems where people who were trying to get more activations or had some problems because, you know, their machine crashed and they lost an activation. They were calling up Sekirom support, and everybody's had this situation, and it never gets fun, which is you call up somebody and say, oh, no, that's your hardware provider's problem, and then you call the hardware provider and they say, no, that's your internet provider's problem. And we had that situation. I believe we've sorted that out now. And that's again, another stupid amateur mistake. And we made that mistake. Our goal is just to fix these things as quickly as possible so people, we minimize the inconvenience customers have. But we sorted that out and I'm sure that was frustrating for Dan. And I read that piece and I said, well, that sucks for Dan. Let's see what we can do to make sure this doesn't happen to other people.
Right. One other minor question that came up was that the voiceovers in the game are sometimes a little bit too quiet, especially on surround sound systems. Are there any plans to include a volume control just for the voiceovers?
That's something I've heard. Well, there's two reasons the voices might be quiet. One is there is maybe, I haven't heard that issue in terms of it being a technical issue before. The thing about just the basic game design of BioShock is that the way the audio diaries play is they don't play in cutscenes. Cutscenes are nice because you can sort of score them completely and do your mix and do your balance. But a lot of the audio plays at a place, given the nature of the game, things are happening all the time, and we don't exactly know, and I've been saying this about the game for a long time, we don't always know what state the player is going to be in when things are happening, and we have that problem with game balance, and how we set up a scenario that we don't have the luxury of, a Call of Duty where we know exactly what state the player is going to be in when he comes in, and where he's coming from, because it's a linear corridor, and exactly what's going on, and which enemies are going to be there. One of the great things of BioShock, that we have this sort of emergence, is also one of its biggest, challenges technically, which is, hey, we want people to be able to hear everything. There's a lot of things competing for the player's attention frequently, and you're probably seeing some of that effect. Now, certainly, I'm sure there are sounds that along the way that we could, on review and getting feedback from people to say, hey, this sound is particularly low in the mix or something. But, I think with any situation like that, let's get it brought to our attention and, we can look into it if there's any particular sound that's problematic.
So one more technical question, then we'll move out of that area. I know that some DirectX 10 users have complained a little bit that, and this isn't necessarily a bad problem to have, but that the DX9 experience looks so great that there doesn't seem to be as much bang for the buck on DX10, that the effects aren't that much better. What do you think about that?
I have to say I'm of the school of, and again, I'm really sensitive to people who are, I'm not a hardware person, even my machine at home, I have a reasonably good machine at home, I'm not the ultimate hardware person by any stretch of the imagination. So I believe most people like that. So you have to make development decisions along the way of, do you want to provide an experience that's really good for the vast majority of users, or do you want to spend a lot of your resources making sure the people who have the absolutely latest hardware are getting the maximum experience? And there are choices there that you make. And I think we made some choices to make sure that the vast majority of people who play BioShock and get a stunning visual experience out of it. And that meant we had a little less time to devote to, the people who are looking for the ultimate DX10 experience. I mean, there's some really cool stuff. Like, one of the most common visual complaints about the game is, and this is very common in all DX9 games and all games previously, that, when you have a, some texture that intersects with the ground, you see sort of a line there. And you see now DX10 games, you see the ability to use soft particles and things like that, where you don't see that line anymore. And especially a game with so many water effects, I think that actually is a big benefit. There's also in the DX10 version the actual dynamically generated ripples in the water that one of our programmers, Jesse Johnson, sort of did in his spare time, because we didn't, as I said, we didn't have a lot of time to, and we never sold the game as like a DX10 showcase. I think there was a lot of passion on the team to do some of that, and that's why Jesse went off and did the water, dynamic water ripples in the game, because the water is such a
next 10 games, the developers were actually going to be releasing later patches to introduce updated DX10 effects. Is there anything like that in the plans for BioShock?
The only thing we've talked about so far in our patch plans is the widescreen stuff, so not currently anything we're talking about.
Okay. And so moving away from the technical matters...
Actually, can I add one more thing, Chuck, before we move on? Another thing that, you know, I think I've heard a little concern from people and I'm really sensitive to is, you know, with the activation stuff is, well, what if it's, you know, 10 years from now, Levine, and you're dead and buried, and the company's gone, and I want to play BioShock. Hopefully not in 10 years. We'll see after this week, you know, a couple of the forum posters, you know, they may find their way to me. You know, what's going to happen to my game? You know, like, there are people still playing System Shock 2, and, well, you know, will I not be able to activate my game in 10 years from now and play it if I move, you know, six times and have 23 computers? And what I've talked to 2K about, what they've told me, what they promised me, is that at some point we'll be able to sunset this provision, and the activation stuff will eventually be something we'll open up to an unlimited activations, and so this won't be an issue for people, and they'll be able to freely use the you know, to freely install the game wherever, however many times they want to. Really, what we're focused on is making sure the intense demand for the product early on is entirely restricted to people who are willing to pay for the game. You know, we'll sort of loosen up that as time goes on. We want to make sure that people are, you know, play, you know, 10 years from now when, you know, maybe we're in a different corporate landscape, that, you know, the game is not in any way abandoned.
What do you think would be an appropriate time frame then to open up the game?
That's going to be up to 2K. You know, they promised it would be something reasonable, but, you know, they've given me that promise.
Okay. So shifting gears a little bit, I do have to ask about the Little Sisters. There has been, you know, I don't necessarily see it myself, obviously, but there has been some concern that the game itself is allowing for child abuse in the way that you handle the Little Sisters. Do you think that's a legitimate concern?
No, I think that, you know, the concern has basically come, it's odd, we've had reviews now on AOL, we've had reviews on in Variety, we had the first video game printed review ever in Variety, apparently. We got AOL, we had a great review on AOL, in USA Today, we got AOL's Game of the Year, apparently already they've announced their Game of the Year, even this year, they're confident enough that they'll call BioShock their Game of the Year. Yeah, but, you know, and that's great, these are all mainstream media, we got Washington Post, the only mainstream media that's mentioned this is a local Quincy paper. You know, came in, he had never seen the game, never played the game, and wrote this piece with some factual inaccuracies. But that's, you know, that's what guys in local papers sometimes do. The other people I'm primarily concerned about is the gaming media, and I understand why the gaming media is concerned about it, because, frankly, we've been bombarded with people telling us, you know, that our hobby is this dreadful, you know, society destroying thing for so many years. We're sort of always want to be the first one to worry about it, so nobody else comes in to worry about it first. But it has not been an issue with anybody except the questions I've had from the gaming press, except for this one guy from Quincy, which is our local newspaper. So I don't actually think there's a rule. I think it's a bit of a tempest in the teapot. Hey, I'm not saying that there's not going to be at some point, but anybody who plays the game for 20 minutes, I think, understands that BioShock's a little different than a lot of other video games in the sense that the world we're creating has a lot of breadth and depth and moral ambiguity. It's a gray world, not a black and white world. And especially then when they actually see the sequence where you harvest the little sister, you have to be an adult to actually understand really the what's going on there. It's not exactly graphic, that sequence. I don't know if you, I assume you've seen it.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And that was the goal. The goal was to, so an adult who playing it would understand what was happening, but to there be a little, no amount of twisted, sick person could derive any prurient experience out of that. That it's strictly, we give the narrative, we want the net, it to be a narrative element where you understand that you made a moral decision, but not, you know, as you can see from the game. And we had got dinged in the forums for this, certainly, in terms of, you know, oh, well, that takes away some freedom from the player. You can't run around shooting little sisters. Doesn't affect them. We have story reasons why it doesn't affect them. But that's not what this game's about. The game is about being presented, you know, and then this aspect of the game it's about being presented with a moral choice and having to make that very difficult moral choice. And having no real clear moral guidance as to what's right and wrong in this world, and sort of how to live with those consequences. So that's very interesting. We've noticed, Chuck, is that people tend to go one way or the other, and they don't mix and match. There tend to be people, at least from my experience, who the harvesters and then the rescuers, and they tend to stick with that, which is interesting. It's not like, you know, we're like skill trees in World of Warcraft, where, you know, they constantly going back and dumping a gold piece or whatever to change up their skill track, you know, which is a very min-maxing type experience. This tends to be people tend to put it as more of a character choice than a sort of statistical choice.
Right. Well, now I know, so that there is no moral choice in how you handle Big Daddies, because you're pretty much forced to kill them. Is there a reason why you decided to go that route? And also, are Big Daddies in the game, are they actually human?
Well, you know what's interesting? I've heard a lot of people saying, oh my God, it really took it out of me to kill the Big Daddy. Like, I didn't want it. The poor guy, I felt for him.
I honestly did while I was playing the game, because I had to take him out.
That honestly just completely surprised me. You know, I expected people not to have an emotional connection the same way they used to the little sisters, and that's kind of awesome, you know. Like, I'm happy that people, you know, reacted to those characters that way, and I think, you know, that's a testament to the, you know, to the arts guys and the animation guys and the sound guys, you know, who worked on that character. I certainly didn't write any dialogue for him, as you know. You know, I think that was really interesting, and it's sort of an unintended consequence of the game that people would actually feel. I mean, how many video game characters in the world have you felt anything about shooting?
That's true. That's very true.
And so that's, you know, that's great. And I think it's because, why do you feel that way? Because they read as having a relationship with the little sisters. I mean, that's my. What's your impression?
Well,
why do you think?
My impression was that they were forced into servitude as much as the little sisters were, and so it didn't seem like they had a choice in what they were doing. So you know, why I couldn't save them in the same way that I could save the little sisters seemed a little disappointing to me.
Yeah, mea culpa. You know, I didn't see that coming. I didn't see people having even projecting into that space emotionally about those characters. So, hey, maybe that's something we think about for the future. That's not a patch promise. That's a future product thought of, you know, like that. That really, I've seen that fairly consistently, and it totally took me by surprise, honestly.
So, do you see BioShock becoming a franchise?
Well, you know, there's one of the prerequisites for a franchise. You know, one is there has to be, obviously, you know, demand for it. Two is there has to be desire on the part of the creators to do it. And three is there has to be, you know, the franchise has to be sort of avail, you know, has to make sense to do, you know, as more of those, you know, like, you don't really see an Apocalypse Now 2, you know, that doesn't really make sense. And, you know, for BioShock, I think, you know, we have to sort of answer those questions, you know, all those questions need to be answered. It seems, you know, from early sales, certainly, that, you know, the demand will be, you know, there for more BioShock games. And now it's a question of, you know, do we see that game? Does that game make sense to us? Or is it just, because if it's not as good as the first one, if it's not as, you know, groundbreaking as the first one, I don't really understand why. I don't understand the reason to do it. You know, there's obviously a financial reason, but, you know, I'm 41 years old. How many of these do I have left in me?
I think you're still a young man.
So they take a long time, you know, and, you know, they take 3 or 4 years now, so you have to sort of call your products carefully. But listen, I've loved nothing more in my life than working on BioShock, you know, in terms of my career. It's, you don't often get somebody to, you know, people to put faith in you to make something that's not an obvious, you know, it's not an obvious product to make, you know. It doesn't clearly from on paper make a lot of sense. And so we've put a lot of faith in it over the years, and a lot of other people have faith in it, and now I think we put a lot of faith in the audience that they would want something a little different. And the audience, you know, sort of has said, you know, hey, thanks for not underestimating our intelligence. And, you know, I think there's a nice dialogue going on there.
Well, before I let you go, Ken, you know, forget all the reviews. How happy are you with the final product? Does it live up to your own expectations?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still amazed by the game all the time. Like, that, and I'm not talking about, like, going and listening, oh, you know, boy, did I write that sentence really well. I'm talking about the level of simulation the game has, the amount of care the artists put into the environment. I think, you know, Rapture's a real place to me now, and I think it's becoming a real place to a lot of people. And that's something I never even expected to be able to pull off, you know, that the team could pull off with this product, because when we made System Shock 2, we tried to make, you know, the Von Braun a real place, but we just didn't have the tools or the time or the technology. And between the sounds and the visuals and the characters and the amount of writing we could do for them, great actors we had, I just love being in Rapture. And I, you know, I hope other people like it as much as we do, but I just like going there and visiting it.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Ken. And hopefully we'll be taking another visit to Rapture, or at least to BioShock 2 sometime in the future. And
thank you.
Thanks again for talking to us.
Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Right now is about when we would take some listener questions, except Jeremy has those. So we're going to have to wait until next week to do that. For now, let's just hear everybody's playlist, which I imagine is going to be BioShock, 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 and BioShock. I was playing Half-Life 2 when I couldn't get BioShock to activate. That's, I had been playing it for a while, but then I came home that night and couldn't get it to work. So I'm like, oh, back to Half-Life. It's been a great experience, especially on you know, newer hardware than was out when it came out. It
looks a hell of a lot better. And the big 42-inch monitor,
yes. But I don't think I'm going to be going back to Half-Life until I finish BioShock.
I would go so far as to say the two big games that I've played since I built this new system were Half-Life Episode 1 and BioShock. And I would go as far to say that I think right now Episode 1 is the better game.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, and that's not to undermine BioShock at all, because BioShock is fantastic, and I think a lot of the appeal that BioShock has is the utterly unique setting and the unique world that they've created, which is quite unlike anything, you know, we've ever seen in a game before.
Those are such different games.
Yeah,
but they are very different games. But I've just found that I thought that the intensity of the combat and the cleverness of the puzzles. Like I was just constantly just stunned by how clever the game design was in Episode 1. And I have been by BioShock too. Episode 1 just did it for me a little bit more.
And you know what?
I think BioShock is less linear, and it's got, you know, more emergent gameplay going on.
Yep.
Whereas Half-Life is a very scripted experience. The best analogy I've been able to come up with to describe BioShock's the level of detail that goes into it is, like, most games, like, they try and hook you with the first 15, 20 minutes of the game to get you to keep playing, so they'll put a lot of extra effort into making a lot of wow moments in that. This game has that throughout, so it's pretty impressive.
I'm so glad that we're done with production and I can finally play the game.
Yeah.
I got the other thing I got for the new PC is this kind of hardcore Logitech THX 5.1 surround sound.
Nice.
Because I wanted to do the whole thing. Well, like, okay, I'm going to turn the lights off, I'm going to turn the music up, and I'm going to, like, have the full-on immersive experience. And that lasted about 5 minutes. I had to turn the lights back on and turn the sound down because it's just too much.
So scary.
Yeah. Yeah, when you hear the kind of like the weird little sisters calling out you from behind you.
With the big daddy stomping around and it kind of rattles
the... Big daddy sounds and the kind of the creepy nursery rhymes. It's just, I freak out way too easily at that stuff.
Yeah. No, I was playing a lot of Medal of Honor Airborne for the review, and I actually liked it. I liked it a lot.
You say that like you're surprised. Were you not expecting to like that game?
No, I wasn't, because it was another World War II game. And I thought it would just be like Call of Duty, you know, except all over again.
Right, but you'd played it before, like you'd done the hands-on and stuff.
Yeah, just for one mission. So I was, it was good to know that the entire game is just as good.
I'm much more excited about Call of Duty 4. That's the next big one for me, I think.
Gary, are you playing the Call of Duty 4 multiplayer beta on the 360?
360? No, because that really is a game where, because that's kind of more, you know, Bioshock, I think, works on 360 because the pace of it is slower. There is, you know, fast combat, but you're not constantly kind of, you know, having to react and run through levels. You know, you can take the game at your own pace. I get the impression that with Call of Duty 4, it's going to be more intense. And I just can't, at that point, I feel like the functionality of the 360 controller slips away and you really need a keyboard and mouse.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah, I played some last night, the Call of Duty 4 multiplayer beta. And you know what? I was not as impressed as I thought I would be.
That's the other thing. I'm not actually that fussed about the multiplayer mode. For me, it's all about, I want to get into the single player story. I like that part of the experience.
Yeah. And then you were playing World in Conflict, right?
Right. I also did the review for that, which is, you know, it's Battlefield meets RTS, which, yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's going to catch on in a big way for LAN parties and stuff. It's much, much faster paced than your usual RTS
Did you say Battlefield meets ROTS?
No, I said Battlefield meets RTS.
RTS.
Yeah. You said ROTS, which is funny because that's Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. Well, it's not rodents of unusual size. That's our
no, it's our
YouTube. Yeah. But anyway, RTS. But you don't have to worry about building up bases. You're pretty much always at full strength with a bunch of guys on the field, and there's always death raining down from above with all the special abilities. It's pretty cool.
Everybody got to review all these kick-ass games this month. I got to review Sherlock Holmes: The Awakened. You know what? Next month.
Yeah, games. Yeah. I remember the case of the serrated scalpel, that from EA. That was an awesome game.
And actually, I mean, I don't want to talk about what I thought about it because the review hasn't come out yet. But it was a very typical adventure game moment where, you know, you're moving through like a murder scene and you're stumbling upon clues in the order in which you happen to find them. And so one of the clues that I stumbled upon was a dead body. And so I spent like 5 minutes, you know, investigating the dead body and collecting clues and whatnot. And you know, thought I had found every clue at the crime scene, but clearly had not because I couldn't leave the room. So I'm kind of running around the room trying to find the missing clue, and I finally stumble upon it. And when I do, it activates a cutscene in which myself and my other characters scream and exclaim at their horror at the dead body that they've just discovered.
My God.
Yeah. Look at that dead body that we've just examined for 10 minutes.
That's so the memories of a goldfish.
That was a little silly.
Okay, well, I guess that'll have to do it for us this week. If you want a longer podcast, root for Jeremy to come back.
If you want a longer podcast, recycle and stop global warming.
Al Gore was right. if everyone just thinks really hard for Jeremy's internet access to come back, I'm sure that'll totally work. Okay, everybody, we'll see you next week. What's that?
I was saying, there's no place like home.
Yeah, right. Lick your heels 3 times.
Yeah. So, everybody, we'll see you next week. There was some. I googled Mike Wolff Microsoft, and it came up with like research development or something. I have no responsibility for what Google comes up with.
Yeah, there's a Mike Wolff with an E that works in San Francisco that does security work, and then there's a Michael Wolff here in Redmond that does MSDN. So, and there's actually several other Michael Wolffs at Microsoft. So.
There's a Dan Stapleton who's like a cruise ship magician, which is hilarious.
Oh, so much cooler than you.
Yeah.
That's the guy we meant to hire. Who are you? who the hell are you?
I've been faking the magic tricks the whole time. So everybody, we'll see you next week.
Bioshock.
Except Greg.
I want you to make a special run to Autobot City.
Yes, Greg would be here next week, except he has to make a special run to Autobot City.
Megatron must be stopped.
And stop Megatron.
Bye.